Chapter 8. Bulra, Zuag, and I all stood next to the fissure, and the beautiful seer chanted in a strange, guttural language I'd never heard before. The brunette woman held a length of black tentacle in her hands that the orc captain had chopped off for her, and she intoned the incantation in her smooth alto voice. The ground under our feet began to rumble, and I watched as the piece of shiny black tentacle in the seer's hands turned dull and started to wither. Then the cavern floor began to shake harder, and the two sides of the fissure closed and knitted themselves back together, until there was no evidence that the chasm had ever existed. When it was done, Bulra looked a little pale, but not nearly as exhausted as she had after her vision back at the encampment.
"Are you well, sister?"
Zuag asked as he placed a gentle hand on Bulra's slim shoulder.
"Yes."
Bulra nodded as she smiled at her brother.
"There is no need to fuss. The demon's appendage was sufficient for the exchange of energy to perform the feat."
"How much longer do you think the soldiers will need to recover?" I asked, and I looked over at Chatteron as he helped the Dolrath spearman sit down. The once petrified soldier had regained some movement, but his limbs were still stiff.
"They should be able to move freely within an hour,"
the airy mystic replied.
"But it will be several hours before we can expect them to march home."
"Shit," I sighed. "I think it's a bad idea to stay here if demons can just come up out of the ground at any time. But I don't want to make things any harder on the soldiers than they have to be."
"I could create a circle of protection,"
Bulra offered, but I saw Zuag immediately bristle.
"No, Bulra."
The big orc shook his head.
"You've already been through so much strain today."
"It won't be a strain."
The pretty orc chided her brother in a gentle voice.
"We still have the bodies of the demons I can use for the exchange, and Amrila might be able to help me with the circle. Zenkari are inherently magical, and she is full of vigor and tenacity."
"That is true," I said to the captain. "I once saw Amrila cause a cave-in with magic that killed a swarm of newly hatched giant spiders. And if I can help in any way, I'm more than happy to. I don't want anything bad to happen to Bulra, but we also have to keep the soldiers safe until they can walk home."
"You care so much for people who are not your own?"
Zuag asked, as he gave me a speculative look. "They are my people," I replied with a shrug. "My wife Nylame is next in the line to be chief, and the Dolrath kinda adopted me along the way before that. I don't have to be a night elf to give a shit about what happens to them, just like I don't have to be an orc or part of the Karardu tribe to give a shit about what happens to both of you."
"Why would you give anyone your shit?"
Zuag asked with a mildly shocked expression.
"Is that a goblin tradition?"
"No," I snorted. "Just an expression. I mean, I care about the good people of the gloom. And the only way we're going to get through this whole Ursinger thing is if we stick together and help each other."
"Very well."
The captain finally relented.
"If Bulra feels well enough, then that's her choice. But you must rest after this, little sister."
"Let's gather the other Dolrath soldiers here,"
Bulra suggested.
"The bodies of the demons should be enough for a large protection circle, and we can make camp while everyone rests. I will see to General Bakoth's eye in the meantime."
Zuag and I walked toward Chatteron and the spearman, and I stopped to check on the soldier. "How you feeling?" I asked the stiff warrior as I crouched down to look him in the eyes.
"I feel as if I'm recovering from a great fever,"
the spearman replied with a rueful grin.
"Chatteron has been telling me about what transpired since I was turned to stone. I'm glad you came back for me, Shield Brother."
"No one left behind, right?" I grinned back at the man. And there were a lot of people involved in the effort. The Karardu made the potion, and it was Ekname who sent us all here. "You just focus on getting back on your feet, okay?" The spearman nodded, and Zueg and I continued on into the swamp to gather up everyone else. We passed Nylame, who helped another of the once petrified soldiers walk back to where Bulra and Chatteron were, but we went on further into the trees.
"Little brother,"
Zueg said as we walked,
"I have to admit, I'm impressed by you. After all I've seen and heard, you seem to be an honorable man."
"Thank you, Zuag," I replied, but I was unsure how to react to the formidable man's declaration. "I have a great deal of respect for you, too. It can't be easy to dedicate yourself to protecting the Karardu territory from all the dangers of the twilight." That was the second time the captain had called me little brother. I knew brother was a term of respect with orcs, but I didn't know what it meant that Zuag added little before it. But I didn't get the sense there was any disrespect meant by it, so it didn't bother me.
"Is it true you took the any princess, Ibsith, to a safe place beyond the reach of Ersinger?
Yes, I replied simply. Whenever anyone asked about Ibsith, I felt the need to be cautious about how I answered. I hadn't even told Scourge or Bracoth the truth about where I was from, and they were trusted friends. But the fewer people who knew about the Iron Doors, or the fact I was a human from the surface world, the better.
It's not my place to ask this of you,
the imposing orc said slowly.
But my sister's vision concerns me. Would you take Bulra to your safe place until the battle with Ersinger's over?
What? I stopped walking and turned to face him. I was not expecting that.
If you take her to your safe place,
Zuag continued as he looked me in the eye,
then I know she'll be protected no matter what happens. I've seen you with your wives. I know you are no womanizer. I've also seen the way Bulra and you look at each other. But I know if something were to happen between the two of you, you will not cast her aside after.
Zuag, I said with an uncomfortable chuckle, I'm happy to do this for you, but...
You're an impressive man. You'd make a good husband for her.
The orcish man interrupted as he raised a large hand to stop me.
But whatever transpires, I will know she's safe. It's my duty as her brother to protect Bulra, even when that means admitting another is better suited to the task.
I don't know what to say, Zuag, I stammered. I'm honored you think so highly of me. And of course I'll take her to my safe place. Then, when we win and this is all over, you'll see her again. And I promise you I will treat her with every bit of respect that you would. Zuag simply nodded his head and seemed satisfied with my answer. Oh, I continued as I suddenly remembered the gift I'd gotten for the captain. I wanted to give you this, too, like a show of friendship. I took off my backpack and unzipped the front pocket where I'd put the Leatherman. Then I handed the multi-tool to the orcish man. He took it and turned it over in his hands.
What is it?
Zuag asked with a raised eyebrow. Check it out, I replied. And I was a little excited as I pulled out the one I'd gotten for myself. It's like a dozen tools in one small package. I unfolded my Leatherman and started to open the different tools in a fan so the captain could see them all. There's a small knife, some scissors, and strong pliers for when you need to pull something hard to grip. Zuag's thick fingers had a hard time with the multi-tool at first, but he figured out that each tool had a little groove in it to help pull them out.
There's a tiny saw,
the captain commented as he looked at the serrated blade. Think about when you're hunting, I explained. That can go through the bones of small game.
Indeed,
the big man nodded.
Or cut through the leather strap of a breastplate to assist a wounded ally.
Exactly, I grinned. They're crazy useful, and made to last.
Thank you, little brother,
Zuag said as he looked at me with a new sense of camaraderie.
This is a fine gift.
I nodded at him, and we collected the other two Dolrath soldiers in silence. When we got back to the others, Amrila and Nylame had already started to set up a little camp, and Bulra sat Bacoth on a large rock as the beautiful mystic applied a thick, black substance to the raw hole where his eye had been. The general kept his face neutral as the orcish woman treated his wound, but I could see that his fist was balled up and his whole body was tense. I helped Zuag set the two recovering soldiers down on the ground to rest, and then I went over to my hawk-faced friend to check on him. How bad is it? I asked.
Our gentle friend here had to remove what was left of my eye,
Bacoth replied in a light tone, but I could hear the slight strain in his voice.
I'm thinking of replacing it with a black marble to strike fear into the hearts of my enemies.
I know I'd shit my pants if I saw something like that. I joked to keep up the general's good spirits.
You must wait until the wound fully heals before you do so,
Bulra cautioned in a businesslike tone.
The most important thing is to avoid infection.
As you direct, my lady.
Bacoth grinned to cover a wince as the seer carefully applied her poultice.
Which do you think is more intimidating, obsidian or a golden orb? I think the gold would be easier to spot from a distance, and it would give my foes a chance to think twice before they engage with me.
Why not a ruby? I snickered. I think that would look badass.
Badass?
The Mohawked warrior repeated as he let the word roll around in his head.
Yes, I like the sound of that. I think a ruby would do nicely.
Once Bulra had finished her treatment, Amrila came over with a small leather circle with two leather thongs attached to it for a makeshift eye patch.
It's the best I could do with what we have on hand.
the horned woman said as she handed it to Bakarth.
But it should help keep the wound clean.
Thank you, shield sister.
The general replied as he tied it over his ruined eye.
How do I look? Incredibly dashing?
Sure.
The red-skinned woman snorted.
Your wives won't be able to keep their hands off of you when you get home. I guess you'll have two more babies in 9 months' time.
Then it was worth it.
Bakarth laughed before he turned his remaining eye to me.
And thank you, Eddie, for making sure my wives were not left without me.
Anytime, I smirked. As the rest of us helped to finish setting up camp, Bulra and Shadaron looked after the Dolrath soldiers while they rested. Then Bakarth, Zuag, Nylame, and I dragged the huge bodies of the demons to places around the camp, where Bulra told us to put them. Once the dead lesser demons formed a circle around where we planned to rest, I borrowed one of Amrila's swords and started to cut off the skinless demon's other hand. Nylame sliced off a foot of the toad demon's sticky tongue, while Zuag got another tentacle from the shiny black lesser demon. Finally, Bakarth started a fire in the center of all this, and Bulra instructed my Zinkari wife in what the two women were about to do.
When I say it is time,
the green-eyed mystic said,
you three throw the pieces of the demons in the fire. We will know that it has worked if the flames burn white as they consume the materials.
I nodded and stood near the fire with the ichor-covered stump of a hand, ready to throw it in when Bulra gave the word. Then the orcish and Zinkari woman held hands and stared at each other as they began to quietly speak in different languages. I recognized that Amrila spoke Enochian, and Bulra started to chant in what sounded like the language she'd used to close the chasm. It was kinda creepy to stand there in silence and listen to the women as their chants became louder and more assertive. The swamp around us seemed to go deadly still, and the only other sound was the crackle of the fire. When the chants reached their peak, Bulra threw back her head, and her long, henna-colored hair cascaded down her graceful back.
Now!
The green-skinned woman cried out, and Nylame, Zuag, and I threw the parts of the lesser demons in the fire. The flames turned white-hot and jumped up a foot taller, and then the bodies of the demons around the outside of the camp began to smoke before they burst into flames. Everyone had to shield their eyes, but even in the sudden flash of light, I could see blue lines of energy that snaked across the ground between the ignited demon corpses. Then the undulating blue lines joined together to complete a circle around us as the flames died back down. The dead monsters weren't there anymore, and all that remained of them were greasy, charred patches on the swamp ground.
It is done,
Bulra said in a breathless voice as she sighed heavily.
We will be safe here for at least the span of a day.
Are you sure? I asked, and I was still in shock at what I'd just witnessed.
Yes.
Amrila gasped, and her small, firm breasts rose and fell as she caught her breath.
Nothing that wishes us harm will be able to get through the circle.
Wonderful.
Bakarth smiled as he rubbed his hands together.
Now, who's hungry?
Once we got the Dolrath soldiers settled and wrapped in blankets to rest, we gathered around the fire while Bakarth stoked the flame and got ready to cook up one of his famous stews.
Oh, shit,
I said, as I watched the red-haired warrior ready the fire. I almost forgot. I got you something. I went over to my pack, grabbed the camping pans I'd gotten at the outdoor supply store, and brought them over to the general.
Eddie,
Bakarth said carefully with a skeptical look on his face,
I am always impressed with your generosity, but this metal seems thin for cooking over a campfire.
I know, I snorted, but trust me when I say these were designed for this. Bakarth looked at me with the leather patch over his eye, and he clearly wanted to believe me. The hawk-faced man immediately warmed up to them, though, when he unstacked the three different pots from one another, and I showed him how the handles unfolded from the sides.
Oh!
The general gasped with intrigue.
That is clever. I have only ever spared room for one pot in my supplies, but I could almost fit these inside of that pot.
And because the metal's thin but strong, you're not adding a bunch of weight either, I added. Soon the general was watching over his stew, some bread as it toasted, and a pan of sizzling bacon strips.
Splendid,
Bakarth said with a contented sigh.
I'm a big enough man to admit when I'm wrong, Eddie. These are incredible. If I'm not careful, soon all of my soldiers will be too fat to march.
I'm glad you like them, I chuckled as I lounged by the fire. But even though Bulra and Amrila were confident that nothing would get through the circle, I kept the Galil close and my eyes on the gnarled, spindly trees around us. We fed the soldiers, set up watches, and then settled in for the evening. I'd drawn the second watch, so I sat by the fire for a while. and I was full and happy from the delicious meal Bakoff had made. Once she checked on her patients, Bulra came and sat near me with a thin, gauzy shawl wrapped around her shoulders.
"You are a fine leader, Eddie Hill."
The willowy woman smiled at me.
"Your presence alone lifts their spirits."
"Oh," I said with an embarrassed smile. "You can just call me Eddie. Are the soldiers doing okay?"
"Yes."
Bulra nodded as she looked into the fire, and the flames were reflected in her green eyes.
"They've all recovered full movement of their limbs. I don't think there will be any long-term effects."
"That's good to hear," I said with a sense of relief. "I know a lot of them have families that'll be happy to have them home."
"My brother is also very impressed with you,"
the seeress said as she stretched out her long, smooth legs toward the fire.
"He told me what he asked you. And my brother wouldn't let me out of his sight for long unless he really trusted you."
"You've a say too, Bora," I said as I averted my eyes from the pretty orc's sexy legs and remembered the uncomfortable conversation about how Bora could do worse than me. "You're more than welcome to come with us if you want to. I don't know a lot about visions or how they work out, but I think your brother is just worried about you and wants to know you're safe."
"With very few exceptions, visions are not fixed points in our future,"
the mystic replied.
"They are only what might be if no one works to change them. And Zuag just takes his duty as my brother and protector very seriously. The poor man needs a wife or two to dote on."
I hadn't thought about it before, but I realized that the stoic captain had never mentioned having any family other than Bulra. "I'm surprised he's not married," I commented. "He's got an important job and he's a fine warrior. I would think the women in Torsbane would be throwing themselves at him."
"Oh, they do,"
Bulra giggled.
"But none of them catches interest in the long run. He acts as if he's too absorbed in his work. But I know he's lonely and just hasn't met the right woman."
"I'm sure he will one day," I said. "Maybe with you safe and protected somewhere, he'll finally give himself the chance to find somebody."
"You would really take me with you?"
the green-skinned woman asked with a smile that showed off her dainty tusks.
"To the place where you whisked Princess Ibsith to safety?"
"Yeah." I nodded as I looked back at the gorgeous mystic and smiled. "I think Ibsith will love to have you there. I could see you two really getting along."
"Really?"
Bulra asked as a rosy blush touched her cheeks.
"I have to tell you, every virgin in the gloom cries herself to sleep thinking of your heroics, wishing it was them that the wild goblin king rescued."
"Oh, God." I snorted as my face flushed the thought. "That's a hell of an idea."
"It's true,"
Bulra pressed with another giggle.
"I remember when my friend, Maylee, told me the story of how you saved the sweet, helpless priestess from the clutches of the Mad Chief's footman, fighting off a whole regiment of soldiers that had chased her as she ran scared and naked through the Great Forest. It's so terribly romantic."
"That isn't exactly what happened," I said, and I was a little embarrassed and a little intrigued by how I'd basically become a character out of a paperback romance novel for the young women of the gloom. She wasn't naked, and it was only 3 or 4 Nyctors. I don't remember the exact number.
"Modest,"
the seer teased, and the look Bulra gave me could have melted icebergs. There was a shy kind of heat to it that filled my core with a new desire. If I wasn't in the middle of a dangerous swamp with her big-ass brother wandering around somewhere nearby, I would have tried to kiss her right there. "Then you'll come back with us?" I said instead. "I'll keep you safe until this business with Ursinger is taken care of." Bulra smiled, and a thrill of excitement unfurled in my chest at the thought of taking the beautiful seer home. The rest of our time in the swamp passed by quietly enough. We didn't see any monsters, goblins, or any of the other sinister things that lurked in the twilight. The Dolrath soldiers all started to feel like their old selves after Bakoff fed them his hearty soldier stew, and then we marched back through the swamp, back to the lands of Chief Ekname. When we arrived at the encampment, we were hardly a few yards inside the Dolrath city before the streets were flooded with night elves. Cheers went up into the air as the lost soldiers were welcomed home, and whole family groups rushed us to embrace their sons, brothers, husbands, and fathers. The others and I stepped aside and watched with a deep sense of satisfaction. Then a tiny, wrinkled old grandmother was the first to approach me.
"Oh, the gods bless you, Shield Brother,"
she cried out as she reached up, grabbed my face with her bony hands, and pulled me down to her level with a strength that I had not expected. The old woman kissed me square on the lips in a motherly fashion, with no sense of self-consciousness because she was so overjoyed at the return of her grandson.
May the gods bless you with 100 children, so that you can know the joy you have brought home to me today,
the shriveled woman added. Amrila let out a bark of laughter when she saw the shocked look on my face as the woman turned to Nilame and did the same to her.
And bless your whole house, princess,
the woman continued. Nilame smiled at the woman with gracious acceptance, and Amrila was almost doubled over with laughter when the sweet grandmother turned to her, too.
No, no, no,
Amrila protested as she tried to squirm away.
And may you have 12 sons.
The wispy-haired elf declared as she ignored the Zinkari woman and kissed her as well.
All as strong as your blessed husband and as beautiful as you.
Then we were mobbed by the rest of the Dolrath people as each of them thanked us in turn.
All right.
Ekname's powerful voice eventually cut through the noise of the crowd, but her tone was warm and amused as she walked down the steps of the meeting house.
Take your loved ones home and celebrate. I'm sure our heroes are tired from their long journey.
As the crowd dispersed, my friends and I found ourselves weighed down with small tokens of appreciation, from flowers that grew along the riverbank to handmade gifts and small parcels of food wrapped in cloth. Before everyone left, a little white-haired girl ran up to me and held up a small cloth doll. The girl had violet eyes that reminded me so much of Ibsith, and I suddenly felt very homesick. "I can't take your doll, sweetheart," I said as I crouched down to speak to her, "but thank you so much for the kind thought."
No, Brother Eddie.
The white-haired girl shook her head and gave me a grin that was missing a few baby teeth.
I sewed this for you when I heard you were bringing Papa home.
She lifted the doll so I could see it, and my heart melted. The body looked thin and stretched, and the hair was short and dark, just like mine. This me? I asked in a voice that was a little choked up.
Yes, Shield Brother.
The girl replied with a look of pride. Thank you. I'm going to treasure this always, I said quietly as I accepted the gift. The girl smiled again and then ran off to catch up with her father, and I saw the spearmen pick her up and spin her around before they headed home. Then I turned back to the chief, who had a broad grin on her face.
Thank you all,
Ekname said.
Are you able to stay?
Unfortunately, no, I replied with some regret. I have a promise to keep.
Then we will see you again soon,
the chief nodded.
And on the day of our victory, we will have a great feast.
My wives and I said our goodbyes, and Bulra hugged her brother as they parted for the first time in what was likely years. I'll keep her safe and bring her back to you, I vowed to Zuag as we parted ways. And she'll be well cared for in the meantime. Ibsith is the kindest woman I've ever met, and I'm sure she'll treat Bulra like a sister.
Thank you, little brother,
the captain said with a catch in his voice.
It will be easier to focus on the task at hand knowing that she's beyond Ursinger's reach.
Then I turned to Bakoth and shook the hawk-faced man's hand. I, for one, think you do look dashing with the patch, I smirked. Are your wives going to be mad at me?
Hardly,
Bakoth grinned.
They'll fuss at first, but they understand the life of a soldier. They've been married to me long enough. Though Vylvi will probably have some words for you when I switch it out for Ruby. I imagine she will find it garish.
I don't mind you blaming me for that, I chuckled. It was my idea, after all. The general laughed and clapped me on the shoulder before he wandered home, and Zuag traveled south to Grimthorn, while the rest of us went west toward the southern Iron Door. When we reached the lake, I stopped and turned to the beautiful mystic.
I really hate to ask this, I said in an apologetic tone, but I think it's best if I ask you to wear a blindfold. It's not that I don't trust you, but where we're going is very secret, and no one can know the way.
I understand,
Bulra replied in her misty voice.
You need to protect your family, and taking me along is a great favor. Do what you need to, Eddie.
I took off my Dolrath shirt and ripped off a length of cloth from the bottom, and Bulra accepted the strip of fabric and securely tied it over her eyes. Amrila, always suspicious, stepped in front of the seer and made a gesture as if she was about to strike the orcish woman, but when Bulra didn't react, my wife looked back at me and nodded to show she was satisfied that the mystic couldn't see anything. I grinned and shook my head, but then I took one of Bulra's soft hands and placed it on my arm so I could lead her the rest of the way. We continued on through the Iron Door and the southern tunnels, all the way to the ladder that led up to the surface above. Then Amrila and Nilame went up the ladder first, and I was alone with the pretty orc for a moment. Go ahead and take off the blindfold, I said in a gentle voice. I don't think it would be safe for you to go up the ladder with it on. Bulra removed the cloth from around her eyes and looked around.
Is this your home?
She asked with a raised eyebrow. No, I snorted. My home is up there, and I have to warn you, it's going to be a bit of a shock, and you can't tell anyone about it when you get back to the gloom, not even Zuok.
I promise you, Eddie.
The willowy woman replied with deep sincerity.
You're putting a great deal of trust in me, and I will not betray you.
All right. I smiled as I checked my watch and saw it was 10 o'clock at night. Go on up. I'm right behind you. Bulra went up the ladder, and I followed her and then led her through the stand of lilac bushes and out into the crisp night air. When the mystic saw the overcast night sky, she didn't gasp like all the other women had their first time on the surface. Instead, she squinted up at the clouds and was quiet for a moment.
I have dreamed of this,
Bulra said in an odd voice to my wives and me.
I always thought it was a vision of the afterlife. But here it is. It smells so strange and lovely.
It's probably because it's about to rain, I said as I looked up at the clouds.
Rain?
Bulra asked, and her brow furrowed in confusion.
It's when drops of water fall from above,
Amrila answered.
It's quite a sight to see, but hard to fully enjoy now that it's so cold.
The horned woman was right. In Ohio, we were lucky to get 3 or 4 days of uninterrupted sunlight in a year. I took off my cloak and offered it to the green-skinned woman, since I could see the goosebumps on her skin, even in the dim light from the street lamps. Bulra wrapped the cloak around herself, and the ladies and I took her to the new house through the side gate that I carefully latched behind us. Luckily, no one was outside, so we quietly went into the new house and found Ibsith curled up on the couch as she watched a movie in the semi-dark of the living room. Dredd was on the couch with her, with his big head resting on her lap as she stroked his ear, while Growler laid on the floor next to them in a half-doze. When we came in, both of the Garms lifted up their heads, but they saw that it was just me and relaxed. I could swear they'd gotten bigger in the short time I'd been gone.
Eddie!
My first wife squealed when she looked up to see me, and then she leaped from the couch and threw herself into my arms.
Oh, I'm so happy you're all home!
After Ibsith had showered me with kisses, she peeked around my shoulder and saw Bulra as she quietly waited to be introduced.
And you brought home a new wife!
The petite woman gasped with delight.